This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Regini Vaidyanathan. Thanks for downloading the BBC's World Tonight podcast from Friday, the 4th of October. In the last few days, we've heard air raid sirens as Iran fired a barrage of missiles into Israel. It came as Israeli airstrikes struck major cities in Lebanon, and as the militant group Hezbollah fired rockets across the border from Lebanon into Israel. The Middle East is a region on the brink, with Israel poised to respond to those attacks from Iran. In this special episode, we're joined by our security correspondent Frank Gardner to go through all of the latest developments. Well, it was just over a week ago that world leaders at the UN called for a three-week ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. But those calls were in vain. In the last few days, we've heard air raid sirens as Iran fired a barrage of missiles into Israel. It came as Israeli airstrikes struck major cities in Lebanon, leaving hundreds of thousands displaced. The militant group Hezbollah continued to fire rockets across the border from Lebanon into Israel. Tonight, the Middle East is a region on the brink. Israel's poised to respond to those rocket attacks from Iran, and it's unclear what exactly they could target. But earlier, the US President Joe Biden appeared to row back on a suggestion that they could go after Iran's oil industry.
The Israelis have not concluded what they're going to do in terms of a strike. That's under discussion. If I were in their shoes, I'd be thinking about other alternatives than striking oil fields.
Well, this weekend also marks a year since the Hamas attacks on Israel, which killed 1,200 people and saw 251 taken hostage. It also marks the start of the Israeli offensive in Gaza. At least 41,801 people have been killed in the territory and millions of Palestinians have been left homeless. Well, tonight we're going to dedicate the entire programme to developments in the Middle East, breaking down what's happening where and analysing what might come next. Well, for the next 30 minutes, I'll be joined by the BBC's security correspondent, Frank Gardner. Welcome to The World Tonight, Frank. First of all, there's been a lot of speculation about what might happen in the next 24 to 48 hours, a possible retaliation by Israel against Iran. What's your sense of what might happen?
Well, good evening, Regina, and all our listeners. It's a pretty tense time. I mean, it's not the first time that we've all said the Middle East is holding its breath. We're on the brink of a potentially much wider conflict, and usually people step back from that brink. But this time I think is different because you've got the two big protagonists in the Middle East, Israel and Iran, two very powerful countries with powerful militaries. I mean, Israel's military is far more advanced than Iran, but Iran's got a lot of missiles and a lot of people and a lot of allies, a lot of proxies dotted around the Middle East. So it's a very dangerous moment. And the precedent for this is that really, for years, Iran and Israel have been kind of squaring off, but fighting a kind of shadow war against each other. Then in April, it went kinetic with Israel hitting Iran's consulate in Damascus. A few days later, Iran responded with a well-telegraphed in advance barrage of missiles and drones, which were all shot down. Israel did a very minor retaliation to that, but then subsequently assassinated both the Hezbollah leader, Hezbollah being the Lebanese militia and political party, but big allies of Iran. They assassinated the leader about a week ago, and they also before that assassinated in Tehran the political leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh. So Iran says, right, we're going to retaliate. And on Tuesday they did. They sent a barrage of really serious, quite dangerous ballistic missiles at Israel, some of which got through. They didn't hit built-up areas. They hit or they aimed at military targets and waste ground. But Israel has now vowed to retaliate. They're currently, they've just come out of their New Year holiday. The Shabbat going on at the moment, which is the Jewish Sabbath. But at any time now, we could see an Israeli retaliation against Iran. And depending on how hard they hit Iran, there's a fear that Iran is then going to up the ante and hit back, possibly not just at Israel, but at US bases in the region as well.
And Frank, you talk about these proxies of Iran. Let's just zoom out a bit and talk about this so-called axis of resistance that we hear a lot about, made up of Hezbollah, Hamas and the Houthis. They're all funded by Iran. They all play a big role in the ongoing conflicts in the Middle East. Just remind us, Frank, of where these groups sit geographically and when it comes to the landscape of this war.
Sure. Well, Israel is sort of surrounded by what it, some people call the Ring of Fire, because despite all the heavy sanctions imposed on Iran for its suspect nuclear program, for its behavior in the region, nevertheless, it's been able to, using its Islamic Revolutionary Guard, it's been able to build up a whole kind of galaxy of allies around the region. So you've got Hezbollah in Lebanon, which is the most important one. It's the biggest one, with a huge arsenal of rockets and missiles, which are being slowly depleted by Israel's invasion and assault on Hezbollah. Then you've got the Houthis down in Yemen, who, as you heard there in the news, have just been attacked by the Americans. The Houthis pose a double threat. They've been attacking shipping that passes through what's called the Bab el-Mandeb Strait that separates the southwest corner of the Arabian Peninsula from the Horn of Africa. And it's a very important strategic choke point for shipping that goes through there. And they've been targeting a lot of shipping. Anything they suspect of being linked to US, UK, Israel, they fire missiles at it or drones. And they have also been firing missiles at Israel. They tried to fire one at Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv. So Israel has attacked them twice. So the Houthis are pretty important down in the south. They've taken over illegally the government of Yemen about 10 years ago. So they are sort of condemned by most of the international community, but they're in power. And then you've got a number of smaller militias, proxies, loyal to Iran, dotted around Syria and Iraq. There's an umbrella group called the Islamic Resistance of Iraq. There's the Popular Mobilization Forces. Periodically, they fire missiles at Israel and drones, and they are involved in the supply of weapons, the flow of weapons from Iran going through Iraq and Syria, overland to Lebanon to arm Hezbollah. And that's the sort of circle that surrounds Israel.
Okay, thanks so much, Frank Gardner. Well, as we were saying, Frank's going to be taking us through some of the analysis on developments throughout the programme. So we will be back with Frank in a moment. Well, let's get the latest first on the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. At the start of the week, Israel sent troops across the border into Lebanon for the first time since 2006. The Israel Defense Forces have told people now in more than 30 villages in Lebanon's south to leave their homes. And the attacks from the skies continue. Through the day, Israel fired more missiles into the Lebanese capital, Beirut. The United Nations spokesperson Stefan Djurjaric said that Lebanese civilians must be protected.
Beirut residential areas, as you know, were once again subjected to intense overnight Israeli airstrikes, apparently injuring rescue workers. Also, strikes continued unabated in other parts of Lebanon. The toll on civilians from this campaign is totally unacceptable.
Well, almost a week after killing Hezbollah's leader, Hassan Nasrallah, Israeli forces said they'd targeted the man thought to be his replacement overnight. Hashem Safadin was believed to have been in an underground bunker in the city's southern suburbs, and it's unclear tonight whether he's dead or alive. Meanwhile, Hezbollah continued to fire rockets across the border from Lebanon into Israel. Well, the BBC's Lucy Williamson ran for cover during one such attack.
We've just heard some bursts of small arms fire and what sounded like some grenades from the Israeli army. And now you can hear the sirens are going off, telling us to get out of the area.
Lucy Williamson there. Well, Lebanon's health ministry said earlier that 37 people have been killed in Israeli ground and air attacks in the past 24 hours. Well, Dr. Abdul Rahman Bizri is an independent member of parliament in the southern Lebanese city of Sidon, as well as an infectious diseases doctor. I asked him to describe his district and what's been happening there in the last few weeks.
This is the capital city of southern Lebanon. It's the third largest city in the country. And the city now that's hosting tens of thousands of families of people displaced from various cities and towns and villages further in the south or eastern of Saida that were bombarded by the Israeli aggression. So all of these people now are being hosted in the city, whether at public schools or whether in makeshift apartments. And we have to manage for them places where they can shelter in.
Mm-hmm. And given that Lebanon is going through an economic crisis at the moment, what material support are you actually able to provide all of these people?
What we are doing is trying to dig from our assets and provide it to our brothers in the country by sheltering them. The government, unfortunately, which has a lot of theoretical plans on paper, never materialized to become a practical plan. So we have really serious shortages of foods, of blankets, of essential material. And more importantly, we are running now short of many medications as well. And we have difficult times in supplying good drinking water and good sanitation in many of these makeshift shelters.
And you're a doctor as well as an MP. What kind of injuries are you seeing?
Well, you see, when it comes to the injuries, we have probably witnessed two type of injuries in the past 2 weeks. First, the unique injuries, which we have never experienced before. When the beepers and the talkie-walkies exploded, we had around hundreds of patients coming with serious injuries in their eyes or extremities. Many of them will end up having either complete blindness or partial blindness. And many of them also had amputations in their upper extremities, mostly fingers.
So you're still treating people with that, and then you've got the second example.
Yeah, we're still doing for that. On the other hand, when the Israeli aggression and bombardment started, and they did not differentiate between civilians and military, and they were hitting at crowded places, we started witnessing a lot of massive war injuries, mainly shrapnels and missiles to chest, to abdomen, and to bones. These are the classical war injuries that we are used to face. However, we have another problem at our hospitals, are the number of martyred people who came and they were dead. Many of them were fragmented, and we needed to do a lot of DNA work and matching in order to identify the names of those we had their corpse arriving to our hospitals. We are also facing a problem with the chronic medications, because many of the displaced people mostly are elderly, and they had diabetes, hypertension, cardiac diseases, kidney and liver diseases. So they need chronic medicines, and these chronic medicines are not available at the amounts necessitated.
Dr. Bizri, how long do you think Saida can cope, given that you have tens of thousands of people arriving who've been displaced, given that you're still treating people who were injured in those walkie-talkie and pager attacks, given that attacks continue?
Well, you see, we have to do it as long as we can. So I think as long as it is needed, we have to dig deeper and deeper. What we are doing is probably stems up from our national commitment, from our commitment to our country, from our commitment to try to be resilient and to absorb the complications and the sequelae of the Israeli aggression against our people.
That's Dr. Abdulrahman Bizri, an independent MP in the southern Lebanese city of Sidon. And just to say that 2 weeks of Israeli strikes and other attacks targeting Hezbollah have now killed more than 1,300 people across Lebanon and displaced more than a million. That's according to local authorities. Well, today, funerals have been taking place for at least 18 Palestinians who were killed in an Israeli airstrike which hit a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The strike in Tulkarm's Nur Shams refugee camp one of the most densely populated in the West Bank, destroyed an entire ground floor coffee shop. Israel said it's killed a senior local commander of Hamas, something Hamas has now acknowledged. Well, let's cross to the BBC's correspondent, John Donison, who joins us from Jerusalem. Welcome to this special edition of The World Tonight, John. First of all, just tell us more about what we know that happened in Tulkarm's Nur Shams refugee camp.
Well, what's happening in the West Bank has been overshadowed over the past year by what's happening in Gaza and also now in Lebanon. But it's been the worst violence in the West Bank, really, in decades. And this attack in Tulkarm, which killed 18 Palestinians, was really one of the most serious we've seen in the past year. Israel was using fighter jets to carry out this strike. They were trying to kill a senior leader in Tulkarm of Islamic Jihad. Hamas's military wing has just put out a statement saying 7 of its members were killed, but the strike took place near a coffee shop and civilians, including some children, we think, were also killed.
And John, the conflict in Gaza continues on as well. Just bring us up to date on what's been happening there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the conflict in Gaza coming up to its year-long anniversary. And I came out here a week ago to cover that anniversary, but such is the pace of events over the past week that Gaza's really dropped from the headlines. But people are dying there every day. We've had strikes carried out in Gaza today by the Israeli military. I saw earlier this week you had more than 100, close to 150 people killed in one day, according to the Hamas-run health ministry there. So Israel is fighting on many, many fronts, and that conflict in Gaza over the past year, more than 40,000 Palestinians have been killed.
John Donison, joining us from Jerusalem, thank you very much. Well, we can now speak to Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, who is the Israel Defence Forces, the IDF's international spokesman. Welcome to The World Tonight. You've been listening there to our correspondent bringing us up to date on the latest in the West Bank. We've heard from Germany, an ally of Israel's, who've said that the high number of civilian casualties in an Israeli airstrike in Tulkarm is shocking. It goes on to say, in the fight against terror, the Israeli army is obliged to protect civilians in the West Bank. Why aren't you doing enough to protect civilians?
No, I don't accept the premise that we aren't. I would say that the operations that was conducted in Tulkarm yesterday was a preemptive strike based on intelligence and the understanding that these terrorists, at least 7 that even Hamas have acknowledged, we're checking that. We expect that number will increase. We're planning to conduct a lethal attack on the 7th of October, on the anniversary, celebrating the death of Israelis from a year ago. So this is a preemptive strike. There was a result of them planning, colluding to conduct more atrocities in the same type of parameters, as we understand, of the October 7th of last year.
At least 7, but 18, so there could be a significant number of civilians. The UN has also criticised your actions, saying that the strike is part of a highly concerning pattern of unlawful use of force.
No, I don't accept that either. I think that the understanding is that Israel has the right to conduct its operations. We're conducting it in a way which puts, first of all, the civilians in the heart of the decision-making process. And indeed, in every military operation, there is especially in densely populated areas, there is an obligation of the military to take that into consideration, weigh up the military necessity, precautionality, and proportionality when we're conducting the strike. And I would say, yes, absolutely, that is what we're doing every single time.
Let me turn to what's happening at the moment in Lebanon. We've heard tonight that the state news agency there is saying that 4 hospitals in the south of the country are out of service. And the UN is now saying that 900 shelters for displaced people in Lebanon are now full. We've now heard that more than 1,300 people across Lebanon have been killed in Israeli strikes. You say that these are limited, localised and targeted raids, but that is a high civilian death toll in this conflict. And now we have four hospitals that are desperately needed out of service.
Yeah, the operations in against Hezbollah are on four different locations. Primarily, the first and probably the most important currently is indeed the ground operations, which are taking place in a close proximity of the border area. They are both, as you pointed out, they're limited in scope and also in scale.
But then why
scale.
Are four hospitals now out of service? Yeah, is enough care being taken, Lieutenant?
If you let me finish. So that's the first and the primary actions that we're conducting, and the forces are indeed operating there. And what we've found is that lots of attack infrastructure that Hezbollah had pre-positioned on that border area in order to go in and conduct October 7th-like attacks from the border of Lebanon. That's what they've been planning. That's what they've done. And indeed, we have identified and noticed that Hezbollah have been using medical facilities, medical vehicles such as ambulances to get around. And that's why we're putting out these announcements calling on evacuation of certain locations and also warning medical services not to work with Hezbollah, because that is also in a breach if they're using these ambulances to get from A to B with their weapons or to ship and move rockets and missiles, then that is also in contravention of the laws of armed conflict. So I would say, yes, there is a deep concern, but it goes in line with what we see and what we understand with terrorist organizations like Hezbollah or Hamas or the Houthis. They have no regard for the laws of armed conflict. They will push on us so that we operate, so that we have
But does it concern you that four hospitals in the south are now out of service and they, you know, are not entirely run by Hezbollah, even if you make the assertion that there were Hezbollah operatives in those hospitals?
I'm concerned that for a year now, 60,000 Israelis have been living out of home precisely because of how Hezbollah is using the civilian arena to attack Israel. Our goal is to restore the safety and security to northern Israel. Hezbollah chose on the 8th of October last year to launch their war against Israel in joining Hamas in their effort. And yes, Israel is determined to restore safety and security and change the paradigm with regard to Hezbollah. They can't be allowed to use the south of Lebanon as a staging ground.
Okay, so let me
ask
you what comes next then. You say, you know, Israel is prepared and wants to, you know, diminish Hezbollah's capabilities. We've heard from Yoav Gallant today, the Israeli defense minister, warning that Israel has, I quote, more surprises in store for Hezbollah. What exactly does that mean?
So I started to say earlier, the operations are currently conducting primarily in the south. But in parallel, we have three other operations which are being conducted. Of course, we are targeting and eliminating the leadership of Hezbollah, like Nasrallah, but also those around him, those beneath him, those on the operational command and tactical command. So it's eliminating those people that are actually involved. The second component, or second type of operation that is being conducted is in the Bekaa Valley, which is northeast of Lebanon, where primarily lots of their strategic missiles, rockets, surface-to-surface missiles, were either stored or built, manufactured, and used, and then shipped off to other locations. Another component of our operations is of course, the Dahya, which is Hezbollah's stronghold. You've seen lots of our strikes over the last 2 weeks that have been conducted against specific buildings which are housing either headquarters or intelligence headquarters like last night, or even the surface-to-surface missiles that are hidden within buildings. So these three components, plus the border activities, the operations to take away the ability to launch ground assaults against Israel, are ongoing, and they're pushing forward, and we're seeing progress, and we're seeing some success in this, of course.
And unfortunately, we've just run out of time, but I just want to ask you, if you can answer it very briefly, is Israel going to make a direct attack on Iran?
That's a very, I think, very clear that there is going to be consequences for Iran's 181 ballistic missiles that they fired at Israel. That's unacceptable. Nobody would accept one ballistic missile being fired at their country, let alone 181.
Okay,
they sent 10 million Israelis into the shelters. That's unacceptable. And Israel will make its decisions. The government will give us our instructions and we will implement.
Okay, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner from the IDF, thanks for joining us on the programme. Well, our security correspondent Frank Gardner is still with us and was listening to that interview. Frank, I just wanted to get your thoughts on what Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner had to say.
Yeah, so it's very clear, even before he spoke, before Colonel Lerner spoke, but it's very clear that Israel's priority is to degrade and destroy its enemies, be that the Houthis in Yemen, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza. And civilian casualties is a secondary consideration. There is a gap between what Israel says is its concern to avoid civilian casualties and the actualities on the ground. You don't get 41,000 plus dead Palestinians from a campaign that takes concern over civilian casualties. There's been worldwide condemnation of the very high casualties of the, amongst civilians in both Gaza and Lebanon. Israel obviously has a right to defend itself after the horrific, barbaric attack of October the 7th, utterly abhorrent, and it is being attacked daily in the north by Hezbollah's rockets. But the way it conducts its operations it draws a lot of international criticism. Now, there is a gap, I think, there is a difference between the extreme distaste which even Israel's allies have had over its conduct in Gaza, with a very high death toll from all the airstrikes, and the way Israel is trying to defend itself against Iran. This is a really big threat now for Israel. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a few rockets here and there lobbed over the border. This is a strategic attack on Israel, and Israel, I think, is going to respond, and this is where we're in risky territory now.
And Frank, you mentioned earlier that axis of resistance and the Houthis, of course, based in Yemen. Well, today, US President Joe Biden has said that the Iranian-backed group were making it difficult to avoid escalation in the region.
The main thing we can do is try to rally the rest of the world and our allies to tamp this down. And when you have proxies as irrational as Hezbollah and the Houthis, and it's a hard thing to determine.
Well, tonight the US has said it's carried out a series of attacks on some of Yemen's main cities where the Houthis hold sway. So, Frank, how worrying is this front in the conflict? Could this also escalate a lot more?
The Houthis have got a very large stock of missiles and drones. They produce some of them their own. Quite a lot have been smuggled in from Iran. And some of them they have inherited from the previous government that they overthrew in 2014. But they've been using these to attack shipping. And as I think, you know, I mentioned earlier, they are at a very strategic point in the world. If you look at the map, Arabia is a kind of square, roughly, on its side. And they are right down at the bottom left, or the southwest tip. And so that means that, I mean, only in the last 2 days, shipping has been attacked with explosive drone boats. So uncrewed boats packed with explosives have been launched at ships that are up to 75, even more than 100 miles off the coast. So they are a real threat to shipping. And the US Navy and the Royal Navy have been down there trying to hit the Houthis and deter them from this. It isn't working. I think the Houthis see an opportunity for themselves with Hezbollah now being depleted, having its leadership decimated. The Houthis see a gap for them in the kind of galaxy of Iran's allies, in the axis of resistance against Israel. They're looking, I think, to step up and fill some of the role that Hezbollah had.
And Frank, we've been talking about the Houthis, Hezbollah and Hamas, all funded, of course, and backed by Iran, Israel's arch enemy. And today, in a rare address, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, delivered his first public sermon for 5 years. And in it, he said Iran was prepared, if necessary, to repeat this week's missile barrage against Israel.
What is logical, what is right to do for the decision makers, both military and political decision making, we would do it at the right time and the right place, as we've done before. And if we're needed to do that again, we would do it again in the future.
Frank, is any of that likely to change Israel's course of action?
No, I think that they will have spent the last few days in close consultation with the Americans, with CENTCOM, that's the US Department of Defense Central Command, trying to work out, rather like a chess player, trying to work out, if they do this move, what is their enemy likely to do? If they do that move, what's going to be their response? They will be trying to war game this, to calibrate it, so that they send a strong enough deterrent message to Iran, but not so strong that Iran then ups the ante and starts firing back in a way that then brings on a bigger fight. And Iran has made it very clear that if they are hit, they are going to not just hit back at Israel, but they're going to hit any country which they perceive as supporting Israel's actions against them. That could include the US, could include Britain. There are military bases used by both countries up and down the Gulf. So there are ways in which this could expand beyond just a conflict between Israel and Iran. And that's why the region is holding its breath right now.
OK, Frank Gardner, our security correspondent, thank you very much for joining us and taking us through some of the complex issues that are facing the Middle East at the moment. Frank Gardner, our security correspondent there. So, Israel versus Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas and the Houthis, escalating violence on many fronts. But what does all of this mean for the future of the Middle East? Well, of course, it's impossible to answer that question in just a few minutes. But I've been speaking to two other experts on the region to try and gauge some views on that. Dr. Sunam Vakil is the director of the Middle East and North Africa program at the Chatham House think tank, and she's an Iran expert. And Aaron David Miller is a former US State Department official. He worked on Arab-Israeli negotiations in the 90s and in the 2000s, and he's a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Well, I began by asking Dr. Vakil what Iran's supreme leader's address to the nation that we just played a bit of there signifies.
Certainly, it's been a quite significant week for Iran. I mean, today, Khamenei, who doesn't normally speak on Friday prayers, and the last time he spoke at Friday prayers was in 2020 after the killing of Qasem Soleimani, the IRGC Quds Force commander, made clear that Iran seeks to be at the helm of the axis of resistance and plans to still defend itself as well as its partners across the region, suggesting that it is going to be escalating if Israel miscalculates. I think the speech was certainly targeted to the domestic audience in Iran, trying to create momentum and a rally around the flag effect for Iranians that are very concerned about this cycle of escalation that is coming to them.
Aaron, I'm going to bring you in on that. Sanam, they're talking about a cycle of escalation. Is there anything that can be said or done by allies of Israel or even internally in the Israeli government to walk Benjamin Netanyahu back from a direction that he seems to be heading in?
The reality is we're about to climb up an escalatory ladder, which both Hezbollah and Israel and Iran have avoided over the course of the last year. I think consultation and perhaps coordination is a more accurate way to describe the U.S.-Israeli relationship right now. As the president said, we provide Israel with advice. We can't or choose not to, he didn't say this, but I would say it, quote unquote, allow Israel to do this, that, or the other. The administration has, I think, conceded the reality that in response now to two strikes of a far more severe nature, that the Israelis are going to respond. It may well, the U.S. may well want to bound the nature, character of that response. And I think they may have succeeded in at least bounding what the Israelis may do on the initial round. Should Iran respond the way they responded before, then I think the target set will expand to nuclear sites and to economic infrastructure. I think there would be a U.S. response this time, and we would be into something the Middle East has never experienced before.
Sanam, the situation that Aaron is describing there would be a serious escalation. Many of our listeners will be wondering when they hear what Aaron has just said, is that effectively World War III then, if it gets to that point?
I don't want to be too alarmist and characterize it as World War III, but this is a really critical moment for the Middle East, and one that policymakers and analysts have been warning about for the past year. The fact that the war in Gaza continues, that the war has now been expanded to Lebanon, and now we are seeing intense 48 hours that could cascade further is very dangerous and alarming, and people should be concerned.
And let's bring Aaron back in, because you took part in the Arab-Israeli negotiations of the late 90s and the early 2000s. Is the issue of a Palestinian state still at the heart of this? This weekend, we're approaching the first anniversary of Hamas's attacks on Israel.
I mean, it's at the heart of it in a narrow sense. Hamas did not attack Israel on October 7th because there was no Palestinian state. Hamas was determined to put the Palestinian issue at the center of the international agenda and make Hamas the deliverer, the redeemer of Palestinian redemption. But Hamas, at least the Sinwar, envisions that the last thing they want to do is to create a situation where Mahmoud Abbas or some Palestinian leader would enter into a negotiation.
And just to remind our listeners, Sinwar is the current leader of Hamas.
Yeah, he's a preeminent decision maker on the Palestinian side. So I think, yes, the issue of Palestine, the absence of a solution, is critically important to regional stability. I think Hezbollah and Iran have other objectives. Certainly the Iranians, these conflicts do not have transformative diplomatic endings. That's the real problem. They're going to go on.
And they're very different, even though they all have the same thread, which is this so-called axis of resistance, these three groups backed by Iran. Sanam, Aaron, they're talking about these three fronts that Israel is fighting on. Has Israel faced such a complex security challenge before?
Well, certainly in the arc of history, Israel has faced significant and very serious challenges coming from the 1948 war. Let's say the 1967 war is a good analogy that comes to mind, when Arab states surprise attacked Israel. And Israel actually, again, showed military dominance and won effectively in 6 days. As we go into the next 48 hours, what's important is that there is momentum to get out of this war. It doesn't seem that there is a confluence of factors that will bring the international community together to bring the temperature down.
That's Sanam Vakil, the director of the Middle East and North Africa program at the Chatham House think tank, an Iran expert. And before that, we heard from Aaron David Miller, a former US State Department official who worked on Arab-Israeli negotiations in the 90s and 2000s, who's at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Well, that's it from The World Tonight this evening and our special program. Thanks again to our security correspondent, Frank Gardner. I'm Regini Vaidyanathan. From me and everyone on the team tonight, good night and have a lovely weekend.